and your warrior calls, we see you, we're coming to you. But yeah, man, like, let's fade the Dibbers.
It's time for
Fade the Dibbers.
Please explain.
Nostra Diblis gives out his pick. You bet against it, you make money.
Cash me out one time.
It's that simple.
Hey, Dibs, your pick stinks.
Dibs, what's the lock of the day?
Well, thankfully for Dan Dibley, facing a three-pick losing streak,
oh,
he was able to come up with a clutch performance last night by picking the Philadelphia Eagles minus the 3.5. They win the game by 8. That's a win for you, dog. Mm. Can you get 2 in a row? That's not been easy this year. Plus, this is a Niner game, which has been especially wobbly, frustrating, and anxiety-causing.
Yeah.
But here we go. The Niners are minus 6.5, hosting the Seahawks at Levi's. Dan?
Well, for me, this is the pick that I am the most confident in of the 13 games this weekend in the National Football League. Check that. There's actually 14 games. There are 4 teams on byes, and this is my most confident pick. And I've been leaning this year on the DVOA rankings, which is defense adjusted value over average. The Niners are loved by this stat. They're number 5 in football, even though they have a 5-4 record. Seattle's number 18, dead mediocre. And then I think about the rest advantage. Seattle comes in with a rest advantage. And I go to the against the spread rankings, the records for teams with a rest advantage. Teams with a rest advantage this year are 23-24 against the spread. So the rest advantage is no advantage. And then I go back to the game these two teams already played, and I mentioned it yesterday. The Niners were up 23-3 in the third before Laviska Shenault turned the game around with a kickoff return. Guys, let's be honest. Let's keep it simple, stupid. The KISS method. The Niners are better. The Niners are home. The pick is in. You take the Niners and you lay the 6.5. Cuckoo! His team, Kukush. His team is better than they were last time they played Kukush.
It's very, very unsettling.
They got McCaffrey.
It's incredibly unsettling.
And
I hate it when you pick the Niners.
Niners 34, Seattle 20.
I hate
it. It's in.
You're usually wrong.
It's locked.
You're usually wrong. It's about the Niners especially.
Well, I mean, they should have beaten Tampa by 15,
but they
Jake
didn't.
Moody.
And that's kind of the point.
It's not my fault.
It is your fault.
It feels like it is.
Why do the 49ers keep underperforming? Why do they keep having a cover right in front of them and not doing it? Why? You don't think by any chance it's you?
Oh, is it me or the special teams? Feels like you're thinking that it's more me than Jake Moody.
I didn't miss a kick. I feel like those two things are related, is what I'm getting at. A lot of what's happening with the Niners feels fluky. Feels like there's a higher power at work.
Gotcha.
And you picking them, I believe, might be that higher power.
This is my most confident pick of the week, Kukush.
That does nothing for me. That only makes it worse.
Dibs has picked the 49ers six times.
Yeah, and his record is?
2-4.
Two and four.
Yeah.
And don't
be so dismissive.
Yeah.
So I'm two and four on Niner games.
2-4.
And the Niners are 4-5 against the spread. So they're 2-1 against the spread when I go against them, which means I'm 1-2 in those games. You follow me?
I follow you.
Is this too much for you?
Oh, I follow you closely because I want to know what to pick.
Right.
Not your picks.
You're not going to fade the Niners. And honestly,
That's why there's so much anxiety when you pick them.
Right. But
that's why I just don't like it. I don't do this.
If you took my pick out of it and you looked at this as an independent thinker, which you're not, and I get it, because none of you should be when it comes to fade the Dibber.
Oh,
you
right.
All just are going to fade the Dibber, and I get that.
No, we are independent thinkers.
Am I 14-15, Grandy?
You often know that I make a pick well before hearing who you're going to pick.
Correct.
I did yesterday. I bet on the Commanders before knowing who you were going to pick.
How'd that work out for you?
Not good.
You are 16-17.
Oh, 16-17. Yeah, I knew I was a game below. But
also, Luke's numbers were wrong. You are 3-4 when picking.
Get
the
it right, Director of Sports.
Yeah.
Okay. You've picked them 7 times?
Right. And
that's funny.
Yeah, and so 2 times I haven't, and they're 1-1 in those games.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The Tampa one is the one that kind of sticks in my craw because, come on. I mean,
yeah.
they were much better.
Yeah.
Much more better than Tampa. And I look at the Seattle game similarly.
Well, they covered against Seattle. And they covered against Dallas. Like, even though those games got uncomfortable, they still covered. They covered.
Yeah, and I think I had Dallas, and I think I had the Niners against Seattle.
No, you picked the Niners in both of them. Yeah. You were right on both of those. Yeah.
So look at me.
Yeah.
Look at the big brain on Dibs.
Niners, right. 3.5-point favorites in both those games.
So, Grandy, while you're on the mic, taking Fade the Dibber aside and the pick that I've made, if you were to make a pick, what would you do in this game?
I'd pick the Niners. Seahawks are not very good.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking for people to bolster my feelings and emotions.
I actually think I'd pick Seattle.
Then do it.
Yeah.
Hater.
No.
Hater.
Yeah. The 49ers, their special teams is crap. They underachieve. They let teams stick around. They've got injuries. A touchdown in the NFL is a lot. That's a lot of points. I didn't say that I think Seattle's going to win the football game.
Yeah.
But that's a lot to ask. You're asking at 6.5. You're almost asking for the team to win by two scores.
Mark, you out here sounding like a hater,
just
my
saying,
brother.
Just saying, I would love, I want to be wrong. I want to be wrong.
I'm just looking.
But I wonder where the sharp money is on this game.
Yeah.
That's what I wonder. And I wonder where the sharp
money
is.
I'm looking at the season, and they were favored by 6 against the Rams. They lost it outright. Favored by 10.5 against New England. They covered. Favored by 7 against Arizona, lost it outright. Favored by 6.5 against Tampa, didn't cover. Favored by 5.5 against Dallas, gutsy little cover.
Barely.
But, I mean, the point that you're making is fair.
Yeah.
I'm with Grandy. Seattle's not very good, but the other side of it is, the bigger the number, the less likely the Niners cover the number.
And the Seahawks are desperate. They're complete. Like, this is it. This is their season.
What it's going to be on Sunday for them then, right?
Probably a desperation sensation.
Cha-ching!
I would imagine.
Exactly, bro.
All right. Just to reboot. Hold on. Warrior calls were coming to you because we had what I thought was a really interesting Jonathan Kuminga conversation going, and we want you to weigh in. So Mike and Don and anybody else on the Kuminga train, stay right where you are. But we're going to let Kurt in Hayward Hills jump the line because he wants...
Hey, there's my two great fellas.
There you go. He has a 49er Seahawk take, plus his royalty around here. And so we go live to Kurt in Hayward Hills on a Friday afternoon. Hello, Kurt. Thank you for calling.
Hey, fellas. Thanks for taking my call. You guys are the best for taking my call. And listen, the 49ers, come on. Seattle's never beat us. We beat them 6 times in a row, and Purdy's never lost to them. So you're going to tell me that Seattle's going to beat us? It's not happening. The score, we got it at 28-21, and for sure it's a must-win for the 49ers. We got to win this game because, you know, we don't want to be looking over our shoulder and seeing the Cardinals over our shoulder. And another thing, the quarterback of Seattle, he leads the league in interception. You know what that means? We got a hell of a back, defensive backs. They're going to intercept him. And another thing, is Bosa going to come alive? But what's the story with him? How come he hasn't done anything? The last 2 games, he's done diddly squat. And I don't know what's going on with the defense. Are we going to continue to have that defensive coordinator? If we lose this game, they have to fire that guy. He should be out if we lose this game this weekend. Forget about it. He should be out. And that's the bottom line.
Thank you, Kurt.
Well, you went from very confident to ready to fire someone. That happened very fast, Kurt.
Well, the reason why is I still think the defense is not up to par at all. And the defense coordinator, I didn't like him from the beginning of the season. I really didn't like him at all. And I have not seen him do anything special yet. We don't rush the passer. We're not the greatest on the run. I just don't like the defensive coordinator. If we lose this weekend, we're in a lot of trouble, fellas. A lot of trouble.
I don't disagree with that. I will tell you, Kurt, though, I would say Nick Bosa's best game of the year was when they were playing this team. And Seattle does not have a very good offensive line, and one of them just retired. So Nick did have a very good game when they played Seattle last time.
Well, that's what we need to hear. We need Nick to get out there and, you know, get to that quarterback. You know what, fellas? I miss the good old days when we used to take the quarterback and pick him up and slam him. Those days are over.
They sure are.
Those days are over, man.
Yep.
You can't even pick him up, let alone slam him.
No.
You can barely even touch him.
Yep.
Kurt, you kind of, again, you came in, you gave the vibe that this one's going to be easy, and then the final score prediction you gave was a half-point cover.
No, I got 28-21.
Right. Well, the spread is 6.5. So that's like when we're talking about the spread, that's a nail biter.
Well, no, listen, the last time we beat the pants out of them, and the last six times we beat them in a row, if it's got to be more than 7 points for sure. I mean, don't go against the 49ers. I know you might want to pick the Seattle, but the points, take my advice, brother. Do not do that.
All right.
Yep.
All right.
Stay, wait a minute, brother. Stay with the 49ers.
Thank you. Thank you for calling
weekend,
us,
brother.
Brother.
Talk again Monday.
Kurt and Hayward Hills, everybody. Jose in Oakland is next up on Willard and Dibs. Jose, what are you doing?
I'm driving home, guys, and calling you just to give you my 2 cents.
Please.
Not that you're asking, but here you go anyways.
Actually, we are.
Okay, overconfidence is something that the Niners have been guilty of in the past and has cost them, okay? I know they've beaten the Seahawks 6 times in a row, but it's a different coaching staff, and I'm pretty sure they are going to make some adjustments. It's not going to be that easy. To be honest with you, beating them 6 times in a row is not that, great. I mean, it's not the same thing because the Seahawks, they haven't been that good. It's not the same as when the Niners and the Seahawks used to go at each other's throat in the past. They both were two of the best teams, if not the best two teams in the league. As far as the Niners' defensive field, you know what? They should get a nickname. To me, they should be named the Syndicate. The Syndicate, because when you see them coming, somebody's going to get hit, okay? I like the way they're playing. They're physical. But then, once again, like I said, don't get overconfident. If they do, they may lose this game by a point or two.
Well, here's
All right, Jose,
thank you very much. Here's what I'd say, and then we're going to get back to the Kuminga stuff and the Warriors, and the game is coming here in 2 hours and all of that. The whole overconfidence thing, I'm not in the 49er players' heads. I know the whole Super Bowl hangover conversation, whether you want to sort of translate that as overconfidence. There have been, in conversations I've had with people like no different than you have, Lo Neal, whatever, somebody who loses a Super Bowl in the following year, how it feels. This has been described to me this way. It's not just this Super Bowl hangover, but the players who make up the core of this team, who have been on this team for a while, have repeatedly, for a number of years now, made their way through the regular season with a lot of success, even if they had a bad first half. Even if they were 3-4 or 3-5, they find their way to the NFC title game. So now here they are again. Same thing happened. They were 3-4. Now they're 5-4. So what that means is, if the Niners were suffering from overconfidence or complacency, I would argue that that was now a thing of the past. That is a first half of the season thing. I don't think there's any way, if they've truly got any juice in their blender at all, that there's any way that now at this portion of the season they could suffer from complacency or overconfidence. These games are not, by the letter of the law, must-win games. But they are in the minds of the 49er players.
They're pretty important.
They cannot deal with what happens if they lose these games. So to me, you're now about to get the best of the Niners. And maybe you did in Tampa as well, and Jake Moody just ruined it. That's a total possibility. So that's what I'm looking for this weekend. I'm looking for a team at home that plays a clean football game and inspire some confidence that this is actually the second half 49ers that we've come to know. And if they can't summon that this weekend, then maybe we are looking at a paper tiger.
Maybe. And if you look at the last 4 games, they're 3-1. And the Seattle game, they won by 12, but they should have won by 20. You lost to an undefeated team that hasn't lost since last Christmas, Kansas City, including a Super Bowl. So it's been 11 months since anybody's beaten Kansas City. Dallas was a game that got a little wobbly late, but you won. Tampa was a game that you were in control of the whole time, but it also got wobbly because of the kicker. So I look at those 16 quarters of football, and you've been really good in more than half of them. Kansas City took it to you, but the Seattle team comes in, and if you want to go back to Kurt's call about the defense, the pass rush has been very mediocre, but they are fifth in football in quarterback rating against. So as mediocre as the rush has been, and part of that is you only rush four, you don't ever really blitz, the secondary's been phenomenal, and the linebacking in coverage, they have been great. So I look at the defense, and we all focus on Nick Bosa. What's wrong with Nick Bosa? Get out of here! He maybe is having a down year, but the defense in totality, they've been pretty good.
Yeah, I think the bar has been set for them very, very high.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay, but you're not wrong. Like, we look at the defense, and we expect really, really restaurant-quality defense. And so if we see something that's just sort of like, you know, fast food, even though it's delicious, we're like freaking out. We're freaking out because we want every handoff to be stuffed at the line of scrimmage. The defense has not been awful. The offense has not been awful. The special teams has been awful. Like, thank you for listening to my TED Talk.
Yeah, exactly.
There's 49er football for you.
Yeah.
All right. 888-957-9570. If you're just joining us, and if you're just jumping in, and if you're just getting in your car.
Really quick, Willie, yeah, before you transition and go to the phone calls, I do have an update from Steve Kerr, D'Anthony Melton injury update. The Warriors still do not have a firm timetable on his ACL injury. Steve Kerr expects him to at least miss a chunk of games. Quote, he needs more evaluation over the next few days. That's Steve Kerr speaking pregame.
I don't love that.
Well,
I don't love that.
I wonder if he's even had the MRI.
Why wouldn't he have?
Because of swelling.
Okay.
And if you have swelling, then you don't get a clear picture with the magnetic resonance imaging. I know when I tore my ACL, they said come back in a week until the swelling goes down. Then you can get a better picture, which is not necessarily good news.
Right.
And I'm not sure if he's gotten the MRI or not. But usually when you need further testing, that would tell me that they haven't had a good chance to take that picture yet.
Interesting. Yeah. Again, the hope was that if it's just a grade one sprain, he misses just about a couple weeks. But yes, call it a chunk of games. Melton's going to be out a little while. And right now, outside of that, no further information or clarity from the Warriors. Again, Warriors and Grizzlies tonight right here on 95.7 The Game. We appreciate you being with us. If you're new to the show, if you're bouncing around, check it out, Sports Radio in this slot for the first time. Welcome. My name is Mark. His name is Dan. We hope you hang out for a while. Earlier today, we had a conversation about Jonathan Kuminga. And you had sort of suggested the idea of the Warriors beating the drum for sixth man of the year because maybe that would make him feel better about his position coming off of the bench, even though, again, Jonathan has not publicly complained, and Jonathan has played very well in his eight games off the bench. He's averaging over 17 a game. But I pushed back a little bit on the idea of having to make Jonathan feel good about coming off the bench. He should feel or can feel whatever the heck he wants, obviously. But if he's averaging more points and the Warriors are 9-2, I just don't think that you should have to go on some sort of a campaign to make everyone feel good about it. And I see a pattern of behavior here, which is fans wanting Jonathan to get things that he hasn't earned yet with his play and with his practice habits. Whether it's going back a few years, you should play Kuminga more. Then it's you should start Kuminga more. Then there were now we need to pay Kuminga and we need to lock him up and he's a future all-star. And now, even though things are going great, apparently there's still this idea that we've got to make Jonathan feel good. I think the basketball and the performance, that all should make Jonathan feel good. And he's up to, like, that's his job, to feel good about what they're doing when the team is 9-2. So that's just a quick summary of the conversation that we had. And I know some people wanted to weigh in on it. Let's go to Mike in Santa Clara. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling on Willard and Dibs.
Thanks, guys. Just driving home, about to get home and start on the new baby room. So hashtag no days off.
Yeah,
For a second,
I thought you were saying you were going to drive home and get started on a new baby. Thank goodness you added another word there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, no baby room.
Yeah. Like, Mike is really up for sharing tonight.
Well, getting started on the baby is more fun than getting started on the baby room.
Damn
am I right,
it
Mike?
Is. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The baby room was actually more work. Let's put it like
that. Yeah, you got to get down.
Oh, my God. Anyways, guys, I was actually going to pivot to the Niners, but I'm actually glad that I stuck with the JK situation. The guy has been playing his butt off out of anything, and I actually applaud and respect him for keeping it internal with his frustration and all that. Look, the guy is going to – he's going to get paid. Now, is he going to get paid what he wants to get paid? I don't know. We don't know. I don't think he's going to get paid that. I think that he's actually solid in his role. But I also think it's because of the fact that, you know, especially with now how Steve Kerr runs the offense, especially with an 11-12-man rotation, he needs to understand that this is the growing pains of it. He's still going to get a bank no matter what. He's going to get it. It may not be what he's looking for, but if he wants to play for a caliber team and a respected team like the Warriors, he's got to stick with the program. And if he doesn't, then you know what? If he wants to make it more vocal, if he wants to make it where he wants to like make more money, like Jordan Poole did, and I know that was a different situation, I get that, then yeah, he can go somewhere else. But I don't want him to go anywhere else. I think he's a great rotational player and potential sixth man at this, at that point. Do I think he's a sixth man candidate at this point? I can't say that yet. But he's in a great system right now. He has to trust the system. I'm not saying trust the process. Trust the system and trust the coaching that he's getting to get there as well. He's also getting additional coaches who have a more defensive background as well in Stackhouse, etc. But I think he needs to stick with it and just get what you can get right now. You're still going to make some money. Just prove us even more after that, but prove us even more during this season as well. Make that bank and just prove in your play, and he's already been doing that. So that's all I had to say, guys. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, and good luck with the baby and the room.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Anyway, I fully agree with Mike.
Well, I get it, but I'm going to say is that it doesn't hurt you to put this out there and give him verbal encouragement through the media about how great of a six man he's been. I'm not saying you need to fly banners from a plane over the city and really beat the drum. I just think that it doesn't hurt you to prop him up a little bit and give him more public encouragement about the transition that he's making, especially if he's not thrilled with the move.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Like, again, it's not, this is not that big of a deal.
Right, right.
But I sort of use that to make the opposite point. Like, he has come off the bench for 8 games. He has done very well in those 8 games. I don't think that somebody now needs to start a campaign to make him feel better about coming off the bench. What should make him feel good about coming off the bench is that the Warriors have won almost all of those games.
Yep.
They've lost only one of them. He has scored in double digits in all of those games. He has hit 12 of his 28 three-point attempts in those games. And that's fantastic. And by the way, if I want to circle one thing that'll make Jonathan millions of dollars, it's that. We know you can fly. We know you can drive to the hole. We know that you're now focused on the defensive end. There's one more thing that the league is waiting to see before they go, dog, let's go north of $200 million. Can you consistently knock down an outside shot? Because if you can, you're unstoppable. And since coming off the bench, he's doing that. So that's the campaign. The campaign is go play and play well, and let's let awards and all of that take care of themselves. I don't like the messaging that it sends if you keep feeling like you need to kind of make Jonathan feel okay about things that, quite frankly, again, as I said earlier, he hasn't earned yet.
Well, maybe he does need that. And I'm not going to project his feelings because I have no idea. But you're reporting that you've read in a number of different sources, and I've read the same thing about, you know, there being whispers or a feeling that he would rather be a starter than coming off the bench. So for me, looking at it from the coaching standpoint, what can I do to make this individual feel better about this? And I do think that there's some angst from Jonathan Kuminga about a contract and all the money that's been flying around his draft class, Franz Wagner and Cade Cunningham getting the max and other players getting these huge contracts, and yet his team kind of said, yeah, not yet. Oh, yeah. And by the way, not only not yet, but now we're going to have you come off the bench. And even though he's playing better, there still is that feeling of, I would be feeling a little anxious about, you know, how can I get this big bag if I'm, you know, having to come in with 6 minutes to go in the quarter?
I don't even understand to a degree why this is a thing. He's averaging more minutes since he went to the bench.
Right.
He's averaging more points. He's averaging more minutes. He's shooting the ball better. He's defending better.
It's about status, though, you know?
Well, but so...
It's about perception and status.
We're going to placate status? That's my point. This is not good messaging. Jonathan's done nothing wrong here. But if I'm the Golden State Warriors, this is maybe a little bit more of a slippery slope than I feel like you're sort of making it, with the idea that now, like, we're winning, we're 9-2, you're getting more minutes, you're getting more points, like, everything's fantastic. Everybody else in this locker room is thrilled to be here. Buddy Hield is over here going, play me 3 minutes or play me 23 minutes. I don't care. That's the vibe of the whole day. Moses Moody has been held down under a rock for 4 years. He's not getting that many minutes.
But that's a great example, because the messaging around Moses has always been, oh, he's a true professional.
And that's right.
He's taking it so well. And so they're building him up. And why can't you do the same thing for Jonathan Kuminga?
I disagree with that entirely. They're building him up because he is doing exactly the opposite of what Jonathan has done behind the scenes. There's no...
Well, you're just building up a player either way. And we don't know what Kuminga is doing behind the scenes.
But there's no campaign for Moses Moody. There's no, like, hey, you should get this.
Well, if they had a 10th Man of the Year award, you would campaign for it.
Yeah, they just think they're like... They get asked the question, and they're like, Moses is a professional. Moses handles everything great. You know what I mean? I don't hear them say that about Jonathan, because it's my feeling, based on what I'm reading, that behind the scenes, Jonathan's got some angst about it. I'm not saying you don't go take care of that, but I think you take care of that with a conversation, not some sort of a campaign for something that, let's be real, he has not earned yet. There's been 8 games. They don't owe him this, that, or the other.
They don't owe him anything, but it comes down to how you want to help a player be the best person they can be.
And that's what they're doing. Look at the results.
Maybe something like this would help it even more if you start to put out into the world just how great he is. And you look at the odds and pick your book. He's either 5th or 6th. Buddy Hield, by the way, is 2nd on those same odds for 6th man of the year.
How many 6th man can you have on the same team?
Well,
doesn't somebody have to be the 7th man?
Of course. And
That's a great question. Thank you.
That was for me. You don't get to give him that. That was for me. And it was a funny question and a great question.
Wow.
Let's point that my way. Okay.
That was Barrows right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that came to me. I'm sitting on the throne.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
he's being petty. Don't worry about
whatever.
It.
Whatever. I go into the weekend the king.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I need to be propped up. Okay.
You don't go into the weekend of the king. I got Steve Kerr this week.
Whatever. I got the last one. So he who laughs last laughs best.
Your rules, not mine.
That's a great question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. That was for me. Go ahead.
No, that was monster.
As you were.
But then I asked a question. I got a laugh and some plaudits. So my point is, I need that. Okay. I'll admit it.
That's a great question.
Did you have a point?
Yeah. My point is, this doesn't harm anyone to give Jonathan.
It does. It's a bad message.
It's not. This is where you and I disagree. This is not a bad message.
But it's amazing that you think this, because this is so the opposite of the way you live your life.
Incorrect.
You would hate doing this for one of your kids.
False.
You would hate this.
Each of my kids needs a certain amount of praise in different ways, and as their father, I try to address that. And in this case, when you've got a player
but that's
in
one
this
to one.
Spot,
but that's one to one. I have no problem with that.
This is a public domain. This is an NBA player who I think that, and I don't know what he needs, but if I look at a player who has shown some frustration in the past at his role, and he wants a big contract, and now he's taking on this role and doing really well, I don't see the harm in giving him a little additional nudge.
And you can do that directly to him. But it, to me, is a very bad message if what you're saying is the Warriors are 9-2, they've put one of their top players in his best position to succeed, data shows it, yet they've got to go start acting out of some sort of guilt.
No guilt.
Or placating a thought that is shown to be almost against counterproductive. Counterproductive to winning.
Don't know why it's counterproductive because to give a guy public praise.
No, because it the counterproductivity part is the fact that Jonathan in the starting lineup didn't work. Jonathan playing with Andrew Wiggins for a year and a half now doesn't work. We found something that does. We're better, you're better, but now we've got to go pat you on the back of the head about it because you're worried about a contract or ego. But to me, Warrior basketball is getting those things out of the room.
You don't have to do it.
But get ego, like
you
Steph
don't have
literally
to do it,
said
it. What if it helps? What if it helps the player? I don't think that this could hurt.
I do.
If you go
out
there and say, you know what, Jonathan Kuminga is one of the best six men in basketball.
Does
Draymond get mad?
Does Buddy Hield get frustrated? Maybe Moses Moody does. They're like, you're placating this guy who's getting 30 minutes a night? I'm over here. I've already signed my contract. You play me 7 minutes a night sometimes. I've been a great soldier, and you're going to go out here, and we got to start sending out good messages for him.
Yeah, see, I don't see this as placating. What I see
I do.
Well, it's only placating if he goes to them and says, I need you to start talking about me for sixth man of the year.
Well, it's
placating.
He already went to the internet and to the reporters last year saying, I need to start. And they did. And they started him. And guess what? It didn't work.
Well, it did when Draymond was out. He was terrific. And
he
then
was
when Wiggins
terrific,
was out.
But the team was not. Right.
Right.
Right. It's circumstantial. He's in the right spot now.
Your use of the word placating rubs me the wrong way because you're implying that he has asked for this or he needs it. I just think proactively,
I'm not implying that at all.
It's a good gesture and it's a good thing that if I were in Jonathan's spot, maybe unhappy about coming off the bench, if I had these things being said about me, I'd feel more willing and more happy about coming off the bench.
I'm not implying that at all, because I've said repeatedly, Jonathan has handled this great. Jonathan has kept this to himself, and Jonathan has played well and been a professional. He deserves all kinds of credit for that. That's perfect. The idea that the Warriors are now supposed to do something publicly, even though everything's going great, that I find... I find that to be a bad idea and a bad message to the other players in the locker room who are sitting there happy-go-lucky about everything that's going on. Let's go to Don in Berkeley. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You guys really got it going on there. So I want to tie together a couple of things from earlier in the week. You had a call a couple of days ago about what was going right and what had changed with the Warriors, and I called in then and I mentioned that I thought everybody was buying in, that nobody was clamoring for minutes, and that Kuminga was my one concern because he has a history of complaining and not being happy, and he's not the most mature among the Warriors players. Then you had Kevon Looney on yesterday, who's kind of the polar opposite, the most mature, down-to-earth, wonderful guy. And he said the same thing. Why is it working? We asked him. And he said, because everybody's buying in and it's on the players. And the same thing applies with Kuminga. And you're right. He's saying the right things and he's putting out a lot of effort and he's doing really well. But those things should be par for the course. That's what he should be doing as a grown-up, the way Moses Moody is a grown-up. And Jonathan Kuminga, you know, everybody's different. Not everybody's got the same psychological makeup. And Kuminga needs a little more coddling, maybe. But I agree with Willard that this sixth man of the year talk is too early. And if Dibs had said this in February after 2 months of the same, I don't think you guys would be disagreeing so heavily. My view of it is whatever psychological help coming in needs, you got to leave it to Coach Kerr. Kerr is one of the best player coaches around and one of the most psychologically attuned people that you have in professional sports. And if I understand that Coach Kerr is trying to make Kuminga feel like he's important, and he's doing a good job of it, and it seems to be working. You can't complain about 9-2, but that's where it ought to stay, is between the coach and the player. So, and other than that, I hope Bosa's hip's okay.
Yeah, us too. Yeah, Don, yeah. Don, thank you. Yeah, and I think, Don, to me, you're spot on with a couple of things that you said. If this is something that becomes a thing in January or February when Jonathan has played 25 or 35 games off of the bench and continues to average around 17, 18 points a night, I think organically this conversation comes up, and I think it'd be wonderful. I think that that would be great. But the idea to think about that right now, it's too early. It's just too early. And what popped into my head off what Don just said, I think there's a risk with this, again, hypothetical idea, that it's bad for Jonathan. If Jonathan is in some way frustrated with the idea of coming off the bench, does he want a public campaign about how good he is coming off of the bench? I don't even know if Jonathan would like this.
Well, the reality is he's coming off the bench, yeah. And he probably will, unless something happens injury-wise to one of the players in front of him, mainly Andrew Wiggins and or Draymond Green. Other than that, he's going to come off the bench. So if that's his reality, I see no harm in giving him this positive reinforcement for what a good job he's done. And again, the idea of a campaign, and I use the phrase start the drumbeat, which is not, you know, giving out flyers or giving out the number 6 to the first 10,000 fans in honor of Jonathan Kuminga's sixth man candidacy. It's just getting that out there, reaffirming how good he's been as a sixth man, whatever, bench player. And I just looked up the qualifications. You need to play in 65 total games, and you need to have the majority of your games be from off the bench and not starting. So, you know, he might eventually start more games than he does as a reserve, and so he wouldn't be eligible anyway.
Well, who knows? That would probably take an Andrew Wiggins absence or injury of some sort.
It could be.
Which is totally possible.
Or a Kuminga situation, because he has to play 65 games to be eligible.
Right. But, again, it seems obvious to me that they've reached the decision that Andrew Wiggins and Jonathan Kuminga are not going to start together. And, for instance, you see, you know, Melton is out tonight. We don't have a starting lineup yet tonight, do we? I haven't seen one yet. Yeah, I don't know who jumps into the starting lineup for Melton. Quite confident it's not Kuminga. We've seen when Melton was out last week, there were some Moody's in there.
Yep.
There were some GP2s in there. Wouldn't be totally shocked if Pajemski gets a shot in there. We'll see about that. Steve Kerr,
Kyle Anderson going to be up and he's going to play?
Probable.
You know?
He's still listed as probable.
Okay.
Last one was updated 8 minutes ago. Still probable.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I think it's Moody or GP2, honestly.
I would think.
Yeah, I would think. I think Pods has been really good, a steadying force off the bench. And this is, I think, all speaks to Jonathan Kuminga as a reserve and a guy who comes in with 4 minutes left in the quarter or whenever you need him. He's playing more aggressively. He's playing more free. I thought Tuesday night against Dallas was a great example where when he came in the first time, he didn't force it. And, well, nobody was scoring in that second quarter. So it didn't stand out to me that he wasn't scoring. But in the second half when he came in, he was much more aggressive. And I thought that he's really fitting in that role where he can be more of a scorer with that group.
We're sponsored by Lucky California, and when we finish things up, we like to call it fun at 5:45 and mess around a little bit. I think here's what we should do today, because there's a number of you, D and Fabian and Mike, whether it's Niners or Warriors, you want to hop in the conversation. Stay right there. We will come to you next. However, got a few open lines for you to jump in on simply this. This ridiculous Netflix fight that's happening tonight. Are you in or are you out? You watching or not? 888-957-9570. Tim Kawakami tweeted a short time ago. He's like, damn it, I'm sucked in. I'm watching.
I love it, Tim.
Although I also read a report that Tyson's not even walking toward the ring until 8 o'clock tonight. So this is going to happen in the middle of the damn Warrior game. I'm out.
It's a two-screen special.
I'm out. I'm not breaking. The TV comes upstairs for Red Zone. It does not come upstairs for Jake Paul from TikTok.
I hate to break it to you, but Jake Paul on the big screen, Warriors on the laptop. Cuckoosh!
I see you differently. Starting right now, I see you differently. All right. 888-957-9570. You in on Paul Tyson or you out on Paul Tyson?
Paul Tyson. Sorry.
Willard and Dibs.
That's going to be a no from me, dog.
If things go your way, we'll see you back here. One for the thumb, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't need one. I only got four fingers, so I'm good.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
It's so incredible. It'll just never die.
It really won't.
It's so incredible.
And it, I mean, it's just one of those moments that I'm both, I guess I'm not really ashamed of it. It is kind of embarrassing.
No,
but
it's not. It's hysterical. Funny. Well, I learned a long time ago, and I learned this lesson, like, that stuff that's like just the most embarrassing thing ever. But then it has staying power and it's memorable and it gives people a smile on their face. Dude, embrace that. Embrace that. That's hilarious.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
That's great. It's not that you did a good job or a bad job. It's just funny and you were a part of it. So that's wonderful. It's just like when Lasorda went after me on the air. I had a pit in my stomach the whole day. And my boss, 100 years ago, his name was Matt Nahegan. You ever heard of him?
look.
He was the one who called me that night. And when the phone was ringing, I'm like, oh, crap, here we go. Like, dude, am I going to get reprimanded? Am I going to get suspended? And he picked up the phone and he goes, that was one of the greatest things I've ever heard in radio. Done. We're good here. It's all good. None of this is serious.
No, it's all good.
We're just here being stupid.
And I just Googled it to remember how long it's been, and it was 2015, 9 years ago, and somehow that clip has continued to live on. I had another embarrassing one with Matthew Perry that didn't go so well for me, and I actually got called into
really?
Jason Barrett's office. You embarrassed us with that.
What'd you do?
I tried to make a joke at Matthew's expense, and he didn't think it was funny at all, and he clapped back at me.
Oh.
Because he was promoting some lame TV show, and he had a lead character that was like Steve Jones or something, and I said,
take it easy on Matthew. He's no longer with us.
Steve Jones? Huh, that's kind of a milquetoast, mediocre character name, don't you think? And he goes, huh, mediocre, huh? Milquetoast, huh? Well, I don't even know why I came on this interview. And it was like, ooh, I was trying to, you know, funny guy trying to be funny.
What'd you say next?
I think Kreidler jumped in and saved me. Hey, brother, it's okay. I love the show, friends. I love some of that.
I love the show, friends.
It's hard-hitting comedy, brother. Kreidler to the rescue, but yeah. Then I got called in the office. You embarrassed us. And, yeah, so anyway, that happened. Yeah. Rest in peace, Matthew Perry.
Rest in peace.
My sixth favorite friend. He was, yeah. Although fifth,
you say that really fast, it makes it sound like you and him were friends and he was sixth on your list.
He actually higher on my power rankings than Ross. Among the most annoying TV characters ever. But go ahead. Jeez. We have another thing to handle.
Jeez.
Really annoying.
It got dark really fast.
Well, we were on a break.
You like yelling pivot.
Yep.
Pivot.
Let's do it.
Well, it wasn't annoying that day. But yes, let's pivot.
Okay.
All right, 888-957-9570. Mike and Hayward wanted to talk about the Jonathan Kuminga thing. Hi, Mike. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm right away. You know, I think you're right, man, about Kuminga. He's fine, man. He don't need no extra pads on the back. Hurst, he's always complimenting that for every game that he does well. He's giving enough encouragement. He's fine the way he is. He just has to learn how to do it with Moody. He's not that mature. He's getting mature. He's more mature now. He was a he's a, you know, talk about those six, man. He needs to work on his skills, work on his free throws, work on his defense, and then everything will just come right to him. He's trying to rush everything. You can't rush with him. He's a project and he's getting better, so I think he's doing fine. You know, that talk about a six man, ain't no way in the world he's no six man coming off no bench. Okay? So, I mean, you know, you got Moody sitting there, and you got all these other guys buying into what's happening, right? So, that talk about patting him on the back, he's got a good deal. He's one of the reasons why Klay Thompson ain't here, okay? That's all I got to say.
Mike, thanks, man. The word that keeps popping into my mind, and look, I haven't talked to Jonathan about this because, but this word's been in my head for more than just this year. I really, really just want Jonathan to trust the organization. They're a smart organization. They know what they're doing. They take care of their people. They win. Like, and again, Jonathan's doing great. He's playing great. He's not complaining publicly. So that's really, in the end, all that matters. But I really think that, you know, in the NBA, you can make all the money in the world off the bench. It's okay.
Yeah.
Like, he's playing 27 minutes a night off the bench. So, really, what is Jonathan losing here? He's losing the PA announcer yelling his name.
Right.
Outside of that, I don't even know what this is. I don't even know how this is different than starting.
Well, starting, there's a certain amount of status, and I don't know if other teams would look at him if he spends the whole year coming off the bench, if that would change what they think about him and thus change what they want to pay him. I haven't really looked at that as, you know, high-level bench players, do they still go out there and get a lot of money? I'm sure they do if they play really well, but I don't know if it's a status thing. And I think about, like, Chris Paul. Oh, you coaching? When people were like, hey, will you come off the bench? And he had never really come off the bench, and yet he came off the bench.
He got
comfortable doing it because he had no choice. And this is different because Kuminga's not an established starter, and in his fourth year, he's been a bench player more often than he started.
I just think, and again, I'm not saying Jonathan's not doing this, I think one of the most important things to teach a young player is that this is about the team. This is about the team. This is not about you. It's not about your contract. It's not about your numbers. This is about the team. And if you trust that, then I think that the money and the numbers will come when you're one of the most talented guys, and he is. Let's keep going. Whoever wants to talk about whatever, let's do it. We got like 4 minutes left. D in the city. Hi, D. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, listen. We're talking about Kuminga. Kuminga's not talking about anything. And I'm telling you, this thing will be fine as long as they keep winning.
Yep.
The problem is going to come in is when they stop winning. And you'll hear more than Kuminga having something to say about. But even Draymond Green said everybody wants to start. Everybody wants to start. So, I mean, let's just get at a rest. But I really called to talk about the fractured locker room that the 49ers have right now. And, you know, people aren't talking about it, but I'm telling you right now, I think a lot of their play is due to the fractured locker room.
Why do you feel it's fractured? And what do you see, D?
Because Bosa has alienated himself from most of his teammates and a lot of fans.
Whoop, yeah, we lost D right in an interesting time. My guess is he's talking about the political stance or the hat from Nick Bosa, and then he did the Trump dance. And listen, all I can say based on what I see, this is not an alienation sensation at all, because Kyle Shanahan spoke.
Cha-ching!
He spoke openly about it yesterday. He's like, yeah, he did the Trump dance. And he said it was, whose idea was it? It was Leonard Floyd. He said it was Leonard Floyd's idea.
And Sam O was also.
And then Sam O jumped in with him. And then Fred Warner jumped in with him. And they were all egging him on to do it. I think we got to remember, this is football. These guys are not out there largely taking stuff like this too seriously. Maybe they are. I don't want to speak for them. But it didn't look like a group that was offended by anything to me.
Right.
I don't think they care if he's getting sacks.
I don't think they care if...
Sackaroonies.
Right. Sackaroonies are better than whatever hat he wants to wear. And, you know, I think that a lot of this is a media and a fan creation, because when they get inside that locker room, I'm sure they might discuss the current events of the day, but when they go down the field, nobody's thinking about, oh, you know, I don't want to necessarily block next to this guy because he's a blue stater and I'm a red stater. And so all that stuff to me becomes mostly nonsense. And I could see him throwing on the hat on like a dare. One of his teammates, hey, you should wear that hat. You won't. I dare you. I dare you. I'll wear the hat. I don't care. And so all this stuff, I think, becomes just like locker room hijinks no matter what.
Granted, we have time for one more? We got time?
Yeah. One more.
All right, let's go. Let's go to Fabian in Maryland. Hi, Fabian. What's up?
Hey, what's going on? Firstly, I'm in on the fight. Just to get that out of the way.
Okay.
But
right.
I wanted to talk about so as far as you know, jinxes or hyper, you know, superstitions go, the Niners have not fared well with 10-point leads, you know, two Super Bowls, some regular season games, including this season. But the last two games we've had 10-point leads and won them both. So I just want to put that into the air going into the weekend, and I think we're money now, man. I think we're over the 10-point curse. That's
well, it. Fabian, here's what I would say, because they did have a 10-point lead last week, and then it evaporated, and they fell behind in the fourth quarter. Now, great, Brock Purdy took them on a drive. They won the game. Here's what I would love to see: a 14-point lead, because it means you're not kicking field goals.
Yeah.
Get a 14-point lead.
About four field goals and a safety.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
I just blow this team out. I mean, enough is enough. You're better. You're home. The rest advantage is nothing this year. Blow this team out. They will. Cuckoosh.
NBA Cup is an hour away.
It runneth over.
On 95.7 The Game. Warriors Live with Mark Grandy is first, and that's brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. Thank you for being with us today. A lot of fun this week. You want to do it again tomorrow?
Nah.
Sunday?
Busy.
Monday?
See you then.
Okay. For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.